Well, now to a story making a splash in the US about public versus private presentations of science. A Harvard University study has gone through 40 years of internal and external communications of the multinational oil and gas corporation ExxonMobil. Their conclusion, in short, is that Exxon exhibited a double standard and misled the public about climate change. As the study states, ExxonMobil contributed quietly to the science and loudly to raising doubts about it. The paper was published in the journal Environmental Research Letters, and we've put a link to the paper on our webpage. The research was supported by Harvard University's Faculty Development Funds and by the Rockefeller Family Fund. Dr. Naomi Oreskes is one of the authors of the report. She's Professor of the History of Science and Affiliated Professor of Earth and Planetary Science at Harvard, with a particular interest in understanding scientific consensus and dissent. Dr. Oreskes, welcome to Saturday Extra.
Thank you.
Let's clarify this question first. How exactly have you done your analysis to reach this conclusion?
We undertook something called content analysis. This is a social scientific method that's been used by many other people in many other contexts. So it's an established, accepted scientific method for analyzing documents for keywords and phrases in relation to specific claims or questions. And so we applied this method uniformly to a set of 187 documents relevant to ExxonMobil's climate communications, and then binned them or categorized them, coded them according to what positions they took on four key axes of analysis: whether global warming was real, whether it was serious, whether it was soluble, and whether it could lead to oil and gas assets being stranded. And what we found was that in the internal communications and peer-reviewed scientific papers authored by ExxonMobil scientists, approximately 80% of them say, yes, climate change is real, it's serious, but it is also solvable and it could lead to stranded assets. Mm. But in the advertorials, the public-facing communications, it's essentially the reverse. Just about 80% of those say the science is very unsettled, we don't really know. And in any case, this problem would be way too difficult and expensive to solve. And they never mention the threat of stranded assets.
So, I mean, I think you've actually got 83% of peer-reviewed papers authored by Exxon scientists, and 80% of the company's internal communications acknowledged it was real, in contrast to only 12% of Exxon's advertorials, with 81% expressing doubt. Now, I just think I've got to ask you, what goes in the paper, the public face, is actually a result of the senior executive service and the board's decision. So I suppose, just to really follow through, they don't have to take their employed scientists' views, do they?
Well, no, of course not. And, you know, our analysis is of these documents, so we don't know what conversations took place inside the company. But clearly some kind of decision was made to go public and to promote, to consciously and deliberately and expensively promote a message of doubt and uncertainty about climate science, even though inside the company a very different conversation was taking place.
Yeah, this phrase of yours, ExxonMobil contributed quietly to the science and loudly to raising doubts about it, is very powerful. Could you give us an example, maybe, of what they were saying internally?
Well, there are many papers, many internal documents that are peer-reviewed scientific papers. So these are articles published in scientific papers, and they're typical scientific papers. They're quantitative, they're filled with analyses. They're very dispassionate, they're very unemotional, so they're sort of quiet. And they're also probably not read by very many people because only serious scientists, academic scientists, or company scientists would have read these reports. They're not readily available to the public. So that's what we mean by quietly versus the advertorials, which are taken in the New York Times and are written in a much stronger style. The rhetoric of the advertorials is much, much stronger. So they're very, very... They, and many of them claim very strongly, for example, that if we were to try to solve this problem, it would, for example, wreck the economy, is language they use in one of these advertorials. And the whole purpose of this is to reach the readership of the New York Times, which is potentially millions of people.
Yes, look, that was a very interesting aspect of your report. Once a week, advertorial, although I gather that it looked more like an editorial, between 1971 and 2003, every Thursday in the New York Times, Exxon communicated with the public, and they bought, you say, one quarter of all advertorials in the op-ed pages. I've often wondered why, sometimes it seems to me almost an obsession with ExxonMobil in the US. This helps me understand a little bit more how powerfully it inserted itself into, I suppose, you know, that intellectual imagination.
Yes, I think that's a very good insight, because one thing we can note is that they didn't have to do this, right? They could have just kept quiet and quietly tried to figure out what their position or what their business plan would be in response to this evolving science. And they could have, and in my opinion should have, started to think about, could they become a renewable energy company? Could they invest in energy storage? You know, were there some other options for them to begin to transition away from oil and gas?
Which, of course, would have had implications for their share price, and for, wouldn't it?
Of course. And we're not suggesting that that would have been an easy thing to do. I mean, we're not suggesting anything, that this is, you know, beyond the scope of our analysis. But what's not beyond the scope of our analysis is this clear decision that was made by the company to deal with the evolving science by questioning it, by casting doubt on it, and trying to persuade the American people that we didn't really know if climate change was a problem. And we also know from my previous work in the book Merchants of Doubt, which was published in 2010, that ExxonMobil was part of an organization called the Global Climate Coalition, which deliberately and consciously set out to block the United States government from participating in the Kyoto Protocol to the UN Framework Convention on Climate Change.
Now, I noticed that ExxonMobil has come out and said that, in effect, you've got form on this, that, in fact, you have been very subjective in your analysis, and that you have, for many years, had a particular view, and that there's no change, that this is not a proper reading of how they behaved.
Yeah, well, it's a pretty ridiculous claim, because, of course, the whole point of content analysis is that it is a technique that has been developed by academic researchers to do objective appraisals of documents. So that's why we use content analysis. And it's also why we submitted this to a peer-reviewed journal. We didn't just write this up as a newspaper or magazine article. The whole point of peer review, which seems to escape ExxonMobil executives, is that you subject your claims to independent verification by completely independent and objective reviewers, which is more than ExxonMobil has ever done with their claims. So they make a lot of very strong allegations against me, but I've subjected my claims to peer review. I don't know that anybody has subjected their claims to independent verification.
You do. It's interesting. You do say there, you acknowledge limitations about this textual analysis or content analysis, that it is, quotes, inherently subjective. Words do have meaning in context. You're quite confident that you are presenting a fair overview of the predicament you're describing?
Absolutely. I mean, this is the whole reason we published this as a peer-reviewed paper. We did this as an academic study, and we were very, very honest and straightforward about the limitations of the study. So as you said, as you just quoted, we say explicitly in the paper, of course, any analysis of words, we don't say the content analysis is subjective, the method is objective, but any analysis of words is obviously going to be somewhat subjective, because words have meaning in context. But that's why we subjected it to content analysis. We did what's known as an intercoder reliability test to make sure that that different coders would still interpret these things, you know, in the same way. And again, we had independent peer reviewers look at the study. They concluded it was legitimate. They concluded the findings were valid. And I believe that another person, and we also, I should point out, we have 121 pages of supplemental material where any person who might doubt how we did the study can look at every single paper and see how each paper was coded and the basis on which that coding was done. So we have maintained the highest possible level of transparency. Our work is completely auditable. So, you know, we don't deny that we have opinions. We're human beings, just like the people at ExxonMobil. They have their opinions. We have our opinions. But the point is that we have used methods, proven, established academic methods, to try to get past people's personal opinions and to try to get at the facts of the matter. And that's really the crux of it. ExxonMobil has a 30-year history of disparaging peer-reviewed climate science. So we're hardly surprised that they're now disparaging peer-reviewed social science. But that's the point. That's exactly the point. These are people who have shown a history of disregard for factual information. So my question would be, if we know that they've disparaged peer-reviewed climate science, We know they've disparaged the facts of climate science for a long, long time. Why should we believe what they're saying now?
Exxon employees and shareholders have already filed lawsuits, I understand, against the company on these grounds that you're citing. Who are these employees and why are they suing?
Well, I mean, I don't know who they are individually. You'd have to talk to the lawyers involved in the lawsuit. But these are employees of ExxonMobil, so obviously people who are not anti-ExxonMobil, but who invested in a company-run pension fund where they bought stock in the company, or I think it was a pension fund. It might have just been a stock purchasing fund. I'm not sure of that detail. But the point is they bought stock in the company that they worked for, and now they are concerned that they believe that their stock has lost value because of ExxonMobil's refusal to write down certain assets that other oil and gas companies have written down in relation to business risks associated with climate change. So this is a question about whether or not the value of shares has been affected by ExxonMobil's actions. So obviously these shareholders, you know, this is a lawsuit I have nothing to do with. I'm completely independent from it. But these are ExxonMobil's own employees now concerned that they have been misled about the company's prospects, misled about climate risk, and are now bringing lawsuit in U.S. courts.
Very interesting. Naomi Oreskes, thank you very much indeed for joining us.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be with you.
And Naomi is Professor of the History of Science and Affiliated Professor of Earth and Planetary Sciences at Harvard. And as I said, we've put a link to the study on our webpage. It's interesting, of course, to remember that the US Secretary of State, Rex Tillerson, made really his entire career at ExxonMobil, starting there in 1975, and as chair and CEO for 10 years, stepping aside just last year to take up his new role.